Hey team, welcome to episode 101 of Transition Talk, where we talk about dental transitions and how to navigate the sometimes messy path to practice ownership. Finding the right associate or partner to join your practice can feel like a monumental task. Luckily, there are steps you can take and questions you can ask to feel prepared and confident for the process. We have a full podcast studio today as we've invited our friends at Arthur Marshall to join us and lend their recruiting expertise. Arthur Marshall is a permanent dental physician and advanced practice placement firm. They have extensive knowledge of the challenges faced by healthcare organizations when recruiting top-tier talent, as well as the challenges candidates face when searching for new opportunities. So in studio today, I've got Rich Gerke and Kevin Simpson. Rich is the Vice President of Dental Partner Success, and he has a long history of success in the healthcare sector and an in-depth understanding of market conditions and customer acquisition strategies. Rich brings a wealth of knowledge and skills to the table, this one, including relationship building, consulting, staffing, and business development. Kevin is the Chief Operating Officer, and with over 300 dental physician and executive placements managed, Kevin has a deep-rooted understanding of recruitment and people. His experience involves building, developing, mentoring teams as they implement strategies in support of company goals and objectives. We have two full episodes for you, so Rich and Kevin, welcome.
Thank you, Christy. It's good to be here.
I'm super excited to jump on this one. Good to be here.
It's so fun. Okay, so we get this question all the time, and we get it probably more so from buyers who are looking to either join a practice or residents, dental students that are kind of straight out of school. When we get these questions on the seller side, which is what today's episode about, so just to kind of make sure we're all clear, episode 101, this is going to be seller focused. So if I am someone searching for a candidate, that's what we're going to focus. Listen in to episode 102, and we're going to focus it from the candidate side. But when we hear sellers, we call them sellers in DP, we hear those, they're really looking for someone to join their practice so they can have a transition plan, or they've had the unfortunate situation of someone who they thought was going to buy into their practice, who they've, you know, maybe kind of crafted and had under their wing for a while, who's backed out, and now they're kind of left to find someone. And if you've never had to search for someone, it is a daunting task, and it's something that I don't think that many are prepared for. Most people are kind of solo out there in the world and don't have to do this. So I think it's important that throughout this episode, we're going to talk about what and why you're seeking that, you know, and if you've listened to this, you've heard Charles and I say a million times, like, what is the why? Why do you want to own? Why do you want to do something? What are you trying to accomplish? And so, you know, I'm going to start with you, Rich. If you had to lay out, just kind of start our conversation and frame it out, what would you say are the four most important things for someone who's looking for a potential candidate, associate, or partner? What are they looking for? What should that seller know as they begin this journey?
Sure. And that's a great question. Of the four different topics that I want to talk about, number one and first and foremost is location and family. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very important when a provider, a doctor, is moving his or her family somewhere geographically that's not somewhere where they're used to being, that everyone's comfortable with that. Schools, community, recreational facilities, special needs, things that are important to them as a family and growing their family. Mm-hmm. So that's first and foremost. Secondly, it would be money, income. You know, it's very important to all of us, right? Yeah. We want to make money. We want to make a living, and we want to be compensated for what we do and as hard as we work. And in the dental industry, as well as the healthcare industry as a whole, a lot of work involved. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of hours, a lot of call, a lot of procedures, and we want to be compensated.
Physically demanding. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very, very physically demanding. Mm-hmm. The back, the hands, you know, we've all heard it. And as long as I've been in this business, you know, I've heard it from so many people that I just can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, thirdly is the growth aspect. Do they have room to grow in the position that they're looking for? Do they have a potential for ownership? If they don't have potential for ownership, is there some type of potential possibly down the road mm-hmm. where they can become an owner or branch off into their own business? And then lastly, and probably as important, I mean, you could go in any order here, is longevity, is length of stay. Our intention is always to go to work somewhere and stay there the rest of our life, right? I mean, that's kind of our intention. Does it always work that way? No. And unfortunately, when it comes to the healthcare and dental industry, the average life expectancy or duration for a provider is between 3 and 5 years. Now, if they're an owner, then obviously you can raise those numbers. Could be their whole life, for that matter.
So question, and I'm sure this varies, but have you seen a shift in like those priorities? I'm sure it varies by each human is different, right? So like someone might be, their primary focus is location and they're willing to take less money. Someone might be very money focused and they're willing to go somewhere for the money. Have you seen a shift in those four, right? Across time with like this recruitment class of potential associates versus maybe 5 years ago?
Yeah, I'm going to have Kevin kind of touch on this, but I think I'm going to direct you in the direction I would suggest you go here is quality of life, you know, if you'd like to talk about that.
Yeah, thanks, Rich. First off, great question. You said it best when you mentioned that people are different. We are dealing with a people industry, right? And so when I look at that, I really try to think of it from more of a generational standard. Quality of life has become a very hot button topic for our new graduates. They're the information age. They're the first group of graduates that are coming out now that have access to everything. Mm-hmm. They know how much the guy down the road is making. They know what their parents and their grandparents went through, right? They want the best of all the worlds.
Yeah.
And so that's the difficult piece. I would tell you that most of the time when you're looking at these guys, the guys first coming out, they want quality of life and they want to get paid really well.
Mm-hmm.
And then those priorities shift. It's that first job more often than not. They don't really know what they want. They're only trying to do what other people around them have told them they should do. It's during that first career step that they really start to figure out who they are and what they're looking for. And that's that. What we find after that generally is those guys then are looking for, how can I get to a place where I can accumulate wealth, where I can own a practice, where I can become a partner somewhere or start my own?
Yeah, I think that's important. This is seller focused. So if you're listening and you're a seller, I think it's important you understand and listen to the next episode where we're kind of more talking to potential candidates. But I think in this situation, you have to understand the people who you're trying to attract, like what their priorities are. Because I think for the, especially the older doc, you know, who's maybe looking to recruit someone, it's a very different world and even mindset. And I don't know if it was more money, but I always think of, do you guys watch Mad Men?
Oh, oh, yes.
Okay, absolutely. Have you ever seen that one where John Hamm is talking to Peggy and she's like, I just want to thank you. And he was like, that's what the money's for. Have you remember that?
Yes.
I think about that all the time. Yeah. John Hamm in my head consistently. That's
one of
what
my
the
favorite
money's
shows,
for.
By the way.
Yeah, so good. But I do think there's that shift in, if you have never hired on an associate or tried to find a partner, like the culture and the personalities of the people you are looking to recruit, that the younger generation has shifted. So I think kind of putting yourself in their shoes and trying to understand what your offer brings to the table now and later, I think is really important.
Yeah, so, if I may add to that, yeah. I mean, I'm older. A lot of these partners or sellers are my age that mm-hmm. are looking to maybe phase out mm-hmm. of what they're doing or slow down in their career. But their expectations are different because their work ethic was different mm-hmm. 20 years ago or 25 years ago versus today.
Yeah.
And the generations have changed, like Kevin said. I mean, there's a dynamic paradigm shift there on the amount of work that someone wants to put in on a day in, day out basis versus someone that's been in practice for 30 years and all they knew was work.
Well, and they likely built that practice too.
Correct.
Right? And so I think if you go into this, just my opinion, if you go into a situation with the expectation that they are going to be as grateful as you are and you built it, and you're going to say, well, you didn't even have to build this. Like, that's a negative place you should not start these relationships
can't
from, right?
Look at
like
it that way.
They can't, they don't have that mindset. They just don't have that experience.
I'll take it a step further. The biggest mistake that you can make in the recruitment process as an owner of a practice, someone who's poured their blood, sweat, and tears into building this thing up, and it's your baby, it's an emotional investment, is start the process by looking for you.
Yes.
You're going to fail every time. You're going to be disappointed every single time. And we see it every time.
Yep. 100%.
And we try to identify that. You know, we try to say, hey, Dr. Jones, here's the deal. You're expecting to clone yourself, and that's just not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
You know, so let's kind of shift our focus a little bit as to what type of candidate we're going to attract to your opportunity and how you're going to make it attractive to them.
Okay, and I think that's a good shift because it kind of goes into, like, if you're preparing to do this for the first time, for the second time, for the fourth time, I guess it doesn't matter. I think thinking about some questions that sellers or owners should ask themselves, right, as they're preparing to enter this process. What are some of the first questions you think, if you're considering doing this, that you should start having those that internal dialogue with yourself?
So, Kevin, I'll just start off by just making a few points. Is, you know, one of the important things that we ask all of our potential clients on discovery, when we're trying to identify and isolate what their need really is we say, how much thought have you really put into bringing another doctor into your practice? And you'd really be surprised, Christy, of some of the answers that we get. Well, you know, I've thought about it. There's days when I come into this office and I just want to go straight home and wish I had someone seeing all the patients and doing all the procedures that specific day. There's other days when I can handle it myself and I don't need any help, mm-hmm. you know? So it changes, and they need to make up their mind as to what they want to do. So do you want to touch on that, Kevin?
No, I think you're spot on. There's many a times we'll get starting to have these conversations with potential clients. And we ask them that question, hey, have you really thought about this? Are you sure this is a path that you want to go down? And sometimes it's they just had a bad day. Mm-hmm. They had a bad week. Mm-hmm. They missed a vacation. Maybe they missed one of their children's recitals or athletic events. And they go, I need to get somebody else in here. And I don't know that they've really thought through what that really means, which is kind of transitions right into the next point that we would make is, have you thought about the financial commitments?
Yeah. Yep.
Because that's what we all miss. You think because you had a couple of good months or a couple of good weeks, right, that you're ready to really expand this thing. And not everybody has taken the time to sit down with their associates, their planners, and determine, hey, do I really have the financial ability to make this move right now?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, you'd be surprised at these type of questions that we ask, and we're supposed to be in sales and marketing. You know, too many times I've just assumed that the prospective client was ready to go to work and ready to have us get started. So we'd do the kickoff, we'd do the recruiter introduction, we'd do the site visit when we go out and visit with the client, and the recruiter would come back and say, they're nowhere near ready to even start recruiting. Or they might come back, I'm sorry to interrupt, or they might come back and they might say, boy, they should have started recruiting a year ago. You know, it's both scenarios.
I'm laughing because it's very similar to our first conversation. It's why we have our first conversation. It's why it's free, because it's all just really understanding, like, what are you wanting? Why are you doing this? How long? I'm sure something you guys run into is, I want an associate, and then you go and there's like no room for the associate, which then goes back to like, how are you going to grow them? How are you going to get them productive? Like, you have three ops, and like, where are they going to go, right? You physically need them, but can you actually accommodate them? I'm sure that's a huge problem.
Oh no, we have a full checklist that we go down on the marketing standpoint of asking those important questions of, is there enough operatories? Do you have enough equipment? Do you have enough staff? You know, what is the ramp up time? These are all the types of questions that we ask just to clarify with not only us, but for them, for reaffirmation of saying, you know, we really are ready to get going here, and we do have the space to do it.
This might be a weird question, but how often do you talk to someone who says they need to find an associate when really what they're wanting is like a buyer? Like, maybe it's that practice that's only three ops and they're not really willing to like invest in expansion and do all that. And really what they're wanting is a way to transition out, and they just kind of automatically just assume they need an associate. How often does that happen versus it's more strategic? It's like, oh, I need a partner and I'm going to grow and like that type of thing.
It happens more often than you would think, where again, they're uncertain. They're thinking that they want to bring on an associate, but they don't want to put the finances into the growth in order to accommodate the new doctor and of course ramp up with more patients. And then of course you get the typical comment that is, well, you know, I'm becoming of retirement age. I'm going to be retiring here in the next 3 to 5 years, and I just want somebody to come in and buy my practice. Well, it's just not that easy. And mm-hmm. I think you know that mm-hmm. in the transition end of the business yeah. for NDP, you know that it just isn't a matter of saying, okay, it's time to sell. I'm going to find a buyer. We're going to have the buyer in there and do the close and get yeah. it all done in a matter of no time. So
yeah.
well, it happens more than you think.
I think too, like, I would ask you guys as the experts here, I would assume that the person you're looking for that is an associate can be the same, but also can be very different if you're looking for an owner. Right? Like, there are people out there that maybe don't have a desire to own or aren't financially capable of owning, but they'd be a great associate, right? They're going to be a great employee, long-term, super loyal, productive, but maybe they're just not going to be your buyer, and you have to know what you're looking for before you start doing that.
Exactly. You see that often also where they don't want to have the burden of being an owner and worrying about the day-to-day operations of the business and managing other people. They just want to go in there and do their jobs and go home.
Yeah, I would say, just to add to that, Rich, is that a lot of times part of our process, I tell our recruiters all the time, you're really not a recruiter, you're a consultant. Your mm-hmm. job isn't to walk in and take an order. Your job is to go in there and consult with this client to make sure. I never want to tell a client what it is that they need to do. right? I want to walk that client through and make sure that they're making the best decision for them. So there are many times where we'll start an engagement with somebody and we'll get into the handoff call and we'll realize they're not ready for this. Let's shake hands and part as friends. There are other times where we go into engagements and we go, they're looking for a partner. Mm-hmm. And then as we're 3-4 months down the process, we've sent candidates over, we've gone through everything. They're rejecting everybody left and right. It's not working out. And so we kind of do a rediscovery with those guys. And what we find out a lot of times is you're not really looking for a partner. Mm-mm. You're looking for an associate. Mm-hmm. You just want a worker bee. And that's okay.
Yeah,
you
know,
but
totally fine.
But we have to, sometimes it takes time to break through and really peel enough layers back on the onion to get to where you want to go.
Yeah. I think it's because they think they've been told this is what you need to do. This is the next step. This is how you grow,
right,
and haven't really taken the time to reflect and be like, but is that what I want to do?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So I think it's important. I feel like this is like very much a transition conversation, even though we're not talking about transition because we follow the same steps, but you understand what you're looking for in this person that you're trying to recruit. You understand kind of what your capabilities to offer them. You understand kind of your space. What if you find that person, right? Like, let's say you guys find an owner, someone who you think fits and you've done all your screening and you say, hey, this person looks great. How does an interview work? Like, what should an owner or seller expect as they start the interview process with a candidate, and how can they prepare for that interview process?
Sure.
Rich, if you don't mind.
Well, do you want to take it?
I'll take it. Yeah.
Okay, you can take it.
So let me tell you.
I wish I could take it, but you can take
you
it.
Wish you, okay.
Well, I'm kidding.
We have time for both.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Well, if I go first, then you won't want to hear what he has to say. So. But no, I love this question. It's one of my absolute favorite questions I get all the time, because here's what you do know. Over the course of my career, and I started my career background in physician recruitment, and I was working in the smallest of small towns. Like, guys, I want you to imagine that you're in a one-stoplight town, Western Kansas. There might be a Pizza Hut that's open when you land in, I don't know, Garden City. which, by the way, if you've never been to Garden City, the smell is horrendous, but they'll tell you that's the smell of money. but I'll tell you, over the course of my career, here's what I learned. I learned that there was a lot of things that we couldn't control. I can't control where this practice is located. If you're an owner, you've built your practice, mm-hmm. it's there. It exists. You can't pick up and move that mm-hmm. to make that fit for your candidate. In a lot of situations, I couldn't control, especially in some of these smaller communities, I couldn't control the housing, mm-hmm. where the houses were or how much housing was available. A lot of times I couldn't control the finances. Mm-hmm. Maybe it wasn't a thriving practice. But you know what I realized that we could control was the experience.
Mm-hmm. And
I think that's so important. And I think it's a step that almost every practice I work with, they miss every time. You have all these different variables within your practice, within the process, that you can't do anything about. But what you can do is you can move quickly, you can be engaged with that candidate, and you can do small things like rolling out the red carpet that can really change the dynamic. And I just want to tell you guys a quick story. So this was probably 7-8 years ago. I was working with a small client out in East Texas, and they really opened my eyes to kind of rolling out the red carpet. We always talked about it. We talked about putting the fruit basket in the hotel and, you know, doing all the small things. And what they did is I came down, we sat down, and they had 14 recruitments that they were trying to accomplish over the course of a year. That is a monumental task, yeah. in a small hospital. And we went through the entire process, and they had this facility called the Institute of Healthy Living. The Institute of Healthy Living was basically a gym that this critical access hospital invested in. And in this gym, they also had pedicures, manicures, facials, massage therapy, things of that nature. So here's what we started doing. We started every time we would have a candidate come out. The first thing that would happen is when they walked in, they had this gal, her name was Debbie Tips. Love Debbie. Sweet old lady, been in the community for a very, very long time. She was the first person they met. She had the personality. She was bubbly. She made people feel invited, right? She was there. The first thing they did is they had the doctor robe. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, scrubs.
Mm-hmm. And they had it embroidered with their name already on it and the facility's name on it. And they put that on them when they got there. Here it is. And first off, it just suddenly made you feel like, hey, I'm at home. I'm here. I'm there, right? So she would walk them through the entirety of the interview process. But what was just mind-blowing to me was on the interview process, during the interview process, they always made time on the itinerary to schedule both the candidate and the spouse with a couple's massage, a couple's facial, a couple's pedicure, and a couple's manicure. Okay. And I would tell clients, they're like, wait, well, hold on. You're having people come to interview for you. You're trying to figure out if this is the right fit for you. And you're getting them massages. Like, how does that make any sense? And here's what they realized. And what we realized together was that, well, that probably cost them $200, you know, $200 on the bottom line. Here's what we found out. I was recruiting this cardiovascular thoracic surgeon. This guy was fresh out of a Baylor fellowship, could have went anywhere in the country, interviewed at 12 different locations. He gets done with his interview. I call him. He's driving back down to Houston. And I said, Doc, how'd it go? And he goes, Kevin, the biggest complaint I have is I am absolutely exhausted. And I said, okay. So did it not go good? He goes, no, I've been on 12 interviews. This is the best interview that I've ever had. No place made me feel like I was at home. I'm just beat. And it was because they gave me the massage at the very end. And now I'm barely able to keep my eyes open. And I'm like,
oh wow.
So it gets better from there. They got to know this guy. They got to know his fiance. So he was engaged. His fiance was there. So the COO, when she's going to make him the offer, she calls him. She picks up the phone. She says, Doctor, listen, we're going to make you this offer. We're really excited to have you join. We've actually raised your sign-on bonus by $10,000. But there's a caveat. You have to spend that $10,000 on this ring. This is the ring that your fiance told me she wanted.
Oh, my gosh.
They got that in depth with this guy. And he laughed and said, where do I sign? But we saw this, and you know, that's just one particular instance, but we saw it over and over and over again. And so what I found out is that, you know, again, you can't control all the other variables, but you can control the experience. And something as simple as a $100 massage may make all the difference in you getting turned down or finding the right person for your practice.
Oh my gosh. That's a great story, Rich.
Yeah. That is a wonderful story. I wanted to talk more about the mechanics. So you'd kind of ask, what is the process?
Yep.
So when we present the candidate, after we've done all the screening and the vetting of the candidate, we present a full CV, dossier, cover letter to our client, to the owner, to CWA client, and explain everything about the candidate. But like Kevin said, we talk more about the family itself, what they're looking for. And then once we present, then they'll set up an audiovisual Teams or Zoom call. They'll do that after that. Then if they're interested, then we go on to a physical on-site interview. And I think rolling out the red carpet is very important. Kevin, that was a long, good story, but very long story. And it worked, right? But it's important that the client realizes that to cross your T's and dot your I's, make sure that you have a real estate person that knows the area, that can take them around and show them housing, that can really, really make them feel at home.
Yeah, I could not agree more. We say it all the time. It is a first date. And I think the biggest mistake we see our clients make, or clients who call us who have had failed experiences, is they assume that the purpose of that is for the candidate to impress them, not for them to impress the candidate. It is a two-way street, right? If this is going to be a good relationship, we both have to impress each other. And if you're in a location that's really hard, like you said, where you can't control where in the world your practice is, take them on a tour, show them the elementary school, show them the good parts of town, take them to the nice restaurant. Like, do the things that make them feel like you've put effort into it, because at the end of the day, going back to your four points, right? It's location and family. Is my family going to be comfortable? And then longevity. Can I see myself here long term? But you can't maybe offer them the highest money, or you can't, you know, offer them the ski slope growth. Maybe you can offer them other things that may matter more. So I love both of those things. And I think the process you detail is really important to understand kind of how long it takes, and that it's not just a, here's a CV, here's an offer. Right? Like,
sure.
If that's what you're looking for, then you're probably not going to find the right person, and you're going to waste a lot of time and money, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, it's time consuming not only for the client or the owner, but it's time consuming for us, because we put a lot of effort into it. Just a quick story for you that happened here recently. I went and visited one of my clients, and it was kind of an impromptu visit. They knew I was coming to see them, but I also knew that they had a candidate in for interview, and I was in the area. It was right here locally. And I went in, and when I walked in, I saw this young lady sitting in the break room, and she was all by herself. And I said to the doctor, I said, who's the lady in there? Well, that's our candidate. And I said, are you serious? And I wanted to just jump all over it. And about 20 minutes went by, and I finally went in there and started talking to her and introduced myself. Of course, I'd never met her before, because the relationship was between her and the recruiter. And it was about 20 minutes later, I was getting ready to leave, and I was walking by the break room, and she was eating Jimmy John's by herself. And I just made the comment, to the owner, I just said, I'm going to tell you right now, she's not going to come on board with you. And he goes, well, why not? And I said, because you treated her as an applicant. Mm-hmm. You treated her like she was coming in for just a menial position when she is in fact going to be a very integral part of your practice. So it's just little stories like that that I've seen in my tenure in 30 years. I mean, I could tell you some stories and a half, but the majority of them are very similar to Kevin's, which are heartfelt. They treat the people well,
yeah,
and therefore are successful.
What does someone need to think if they're thinking about bringing on someone? Clearly, like, am I in the good place? Like, what does the process look like? What about after you hire them, right? I assume that like the onboarding and the rollout and the vision of what you anticipate this person can do is equally as important. So what should someone think about from that aspect?
We refer to that as the post, you know, mm-hmm. So they've hired, they've gone through their orientation process. A lot of this we cannot control. Mm-hmm. You know, they have their own, especially depending on the size of the practice. Mm-hmm. The smaller the practice sometimes is better because they get more hands-on than a larger practice. They kind of get lost in the shuffle. But we always follow up with the candidate. The recruiter always follows up with the candidate, and the business development person, such as myself, mm-hmm. follows up with the client about 2 to 3 weeks later, and we always say, how's things going? Mm-hmm. You know, we know when their start date was. Is everything going well? How is he or she fitting into the practice? Is everything going well? And if there is any problems, what may they be? And then hopefully identify and isolate those problems.
Is there anything that you have seen historically that helps maybe not have issues, or a certain approach that client will take that will help whoever that person is kind of be more fully integrated, or maybe just kind of more smoothly integrated into the practice?
What I've seen, it seems to work perfectly, is let them shadow for a few days. You know, let them come in and work with alongside the doctor, or just bump into the operatories and bump out and just see if it's something that they can feel themselves fitting into, and vice versa. That helps.
Before they sign. Got it. Okay, yeah. So more of a preparation before mm-hmm. they make the decision on both sides.
Yep, and we have no problem with that, you know, depending on geographics, you know, as far as where they're coming from and where they're moving to. Obviously, if it's a long flight, then that's going to be a little bit more difficult to do.
And as a client or as a seller owner, I'm paying for that. If I'm having someone come to shadow, that I should expect that that's my cost, correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
Yes, all expenses are reimbursed by the client for the candidate interview and travel and accommodations.
Kevin, anything on your side that's been helpful as far as kind of making sure that the practice is prepared to onboard that associate?
Yeah, I would tell you that there are more than one way to skin a cat, right? The most successful practices, however, are those that are structured, right? You've got to have a structured onboarding environment, and not just of, hey, what the procedures are for that particular clinic, but more importantly, remember we talked about earlier, you know, kind of the experience overall. What you want to do is you want to make sure that that person's being onboarded in a personal level too. They're getting to understand the community, that you need to assign somebody to make sure that they're fitting in culturally with the office. You know, to me, it's marriage. Mm-hmm. You know, you're dating, you go through a courtship, you date, you get engaged, then you get married. But everybody that's married, anybody here that's married knows that the work doesn't stop there. You don't get married and suddenly it's bliss. There's going to be challenges. And the best way that you can handle those is very early on setting the right standards and the right expectations, and then having a structured onboarding process so you'll know. And then what we find out most of all, and this is part of the reason that we have a 6-month replacement guarantee with our particular firm, is because we know that it takes about 6 months. Mm-hmm. You know, we know that it's going to be a 6-month process to really get to know that person. You know, everybody can put on a face or a facade, but nobody can hold it forever.
Absolutely.
You made a comment, Christy, about a courtship.
Yeah.
And that's just spot on, because it's a courtship process in the beginning. And, you know, we all interview a lot better than we probably turn out to be, right? How many times have you heard those horror stories? But the courtship process, as Kevin said, doesn't end there. Courtship process actually should get stronger once the candidate comes on board and starts actually practicing, to make sure that the relationship is solid.
It's a good fit, yeah. So I'm excited we get to keep this conversation going and flip it, but I think a good way to end this episode would be I'd ask a couple of do's and don'ts for you guys from a owner, seller, client kind of perspective. If you are listening, I'll go to each of you. Maybe give me your two kind of short, succinct, like do's and don'ts, maybe something we've covered or something we haven't that you feel like we need to make sure get some airtime. So Kevin, do you want to go first?
Sure.
Or Rich, whoever?
I'll go first. first, and I'll start with don't. The number one don't for me is don't wait too long.
Perfect.
Far too often we'll talk to a client, and by the time they call us and they're ready to start recruiting, it's because they were given notice by their associate 90 days ago, and they're out next month.
Yep.
And they're coming to us going, find me somebody tomorrow. That's just not how it works. So don't get yourself caught flat-footed, I'd say. And then dues just go back to what I've said all along is create the experience. We talk a lot about creating a positive experience for our patients, right? That's a big thing that's going to grow your practice. You got to think about that from your employees too.
Yep.
Create a good cultural environment and you'll be just fine.
Awesome, Rich.
Yeah, the two that I think are probably the most important when I'm talking to the client is don't be afraid of the investment. You know, a lot of times what they'll say is they'll say, geez, that seems like a lot of money to recruit a doctor for my practice. And how we justify that is I always say to the client, I say, well, what you're forgetting or what you're not remembering is the amount of revenue that that doctor is going to generate, not only for you and your practice and your company, your business, but for them also in growing the practice. So don't be afraid of the investment. A lot of times we lose the client on that, and there's not a lot we can do about it. Mm-mm. You know, it's kind of like, well, okay, keep us in mind for in the future. And and a lot of times what happens is they give us that call, like Kevin just said, 6 months later, and they say, now our hair's on fire.
Yeah.
And now we really need someone, you know, so can we get someone in here and start it in 30 days?
Yeah.
Well, then we're all under the gun. We're all stressed out. And it just didn't. And then on the dues things, pay attention to detail. I think that's the main thing. Be all in with your candidate. Treat your candidate as if they're family. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone has different personalities, and we understand that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a lovey-dovey guy. I try to get along with everybody, and just I'm pretty happy-go-lucky. But some people are too serious, and they need to lighten up a little bit and just say, hey, let's have fun in the process. Let's make this recruitment process fun for everyone, including our staff.
Yeah, I love that. Well, thank you, Rich and Kevin, the lovely Arthur Marshall team. I'm excited we get to talk again. Your vast amount of knowledge here is truly worth sharing. I'm excited for our listeners to hear this episode. If you are in a situation where you think you may need to start searching for that associate, you know where to find us, and we will connect you directly to Arthur Marshall. All right, team, that's all we have for today. Thanks for joining us on episode 101 of Transition Talk. Be on the lookout for episode 102 coming up next, because we're teeing up another round with this fabulous group. As always, make sure to share the transition love with those who may not know of us yet, and of course, subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. Until next time, friends.